And welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, and we've got a great hour lined up, a very popular topic. It's called Ask Bruce and Peg Anything. Anything you want. I think mostly about money, but I bet they might take other questions. So I want to welcome to the program the founder of Wealth Enhancement and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer, as well as Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you. How's it going?
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. Hello, listeners. Thank you for joining us. We're not here without you. And Peg and Susie, interesting couple, last couple of days, on Thursday and Friday. And Peg, we can't not talk about that. And by the way, we do want, you know, listeners, your questions, your texts, your calls, your questions will drive the show. It can be on the market this week or any financial question. Or like Susie said, you want to throw me a sports question, I'll try to handle a sports question if you want. But Peg, we have to talk about the market. And I guess the first thing I would say is it is unsettling when you see the market retract that much in such a short period of time. Depending upon which index you look at, it was roughly 10% over a two-day period of time. And that's a lot in 2 days. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat that. That is a big deal. I get it. But I want to encourage listeners, don't let fear drive your financial decisions. When you get too fearful or you get too emotional, you get too euphoric, too excited, you tend to make mistakes based on the short term, what's going on, and lose sight of your long-term goals and strategies. And I've said, I think I said this last week, if you're using strategies or you have an asset allocation that made sense a month ago or a week ago, it doesn't suddenly not make sense anymore just because we have this retraction in the market. So don't react with fear. Try to be smart and logical. I get this is disconcerting, unsettling, fearful. But stick with your plan and don't let fear drive it. And we'll, Peg, I know you want to dig a little deeper into that. The other thing I'll just mention really quickly, I want to give some perspective. So this retraction that we've just had, we went back, our investment management team, and did some research. And they went back and they looked at the 15 single worst days in the market going all the way back to 1960. Quick example, in October 16th of 1987, the S&P 500 in a single day lost over 20%. But then they looked at where the market was 1 year later, 3 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later. Well, 1 year later, after that 20% drop in a single day, it was up over 23%. And as you go through and you look at all 15 of those worst days, the average drop in a single day was a negative 8.85. So again, very similar to what we just saw on Thursday and Friday. But 1 year later, on average, the market was up over 30%. 1 year later, up over 30%. And maybe more importantly, 10 years later, on average, up over 11.3%. So markets go down sometimes. And historically, whenever they've gone down, they've come back. And oftentimes they come back very, very quickly. So, I know I'm being redundant. I get that people are fearful, but hang in there. We've seen things like this before. Markets are resilient. They've always come back. And I guess the other thing really quick, Peg, and I don't mean to overtalk, but this retraction that we've seen year to date, and especially, again, the last 2 days, put it in perspective. If you've been in the market over a longer period of time, you did or should have done very well in 2023 and 2024. So if you look over the last, you know, 27 or 28, 30 months, whatever it is, your return is still should be very much in the positive. What you lost so far this year and what you lost on Thursday and Friday was not basis or not investment money. It was just some of the earnings that you've had the last couple of years. You're still well above water, or you should be. So I know this is frightening, but I guess our message is try not to be too fearful. But, Peg, there's also – it's not all negative news. There's some positive things going on too. Peg?
Yeah, and you know, we've experienced so many of these downturns, especially the most recent one is, you know, the COVID, what impacted actually the whole world, kind of like this is impacting the entire world. But I always look at the glass half full, right? There's some positives to a rocky market. And one is, and the first thing I think of is Roth conversions. So many of you out there have very large IRAs or 401ks, and you have deferred the taxes on that particular account for decades. And now if the market continues to go down, or it's down now, this is the time that you may talk to yourself and say, I think I'm going to take some of that taxable IRA and I'm going to convert it to Roth. And here's the positives of doing that. If you take $10,000 out of your 401k or IRA and you look at the number of shares, you're moving those number of shares over into a Roth, and now you've got a lower basis in that Roth to grow tax-free for the future. So I always, always love when the market is volatile, in that this is my number one rant with people, is try to get your money matrix, which we talk about a lot on this show, get that taxable column lower, get that liability lower in times of volatility. So that's a big one. And then also, if you do have tax losses, if you've got positions not in your IRA and 401k, they're taxable, you have capital gains. Bruce, you just mentioned, I mean, the markets are up 80% in the last 5 years. So you probably have a lot of positions that have gains, but there's some sleepers in there, and it's, you know, mostly international over the last 5 years, didn't keep up with the U.S. So there might be positions where you can go take those losses. And that's real. You get $3,000 off your income tax, or you can cross with some gains. And if you don't take advantage of that, and I believe the market's going to go back up, I don't know when, but you will lose that opportunity. So while it's low, look at your portfolio and see if you can harvest some of those losses. And then the last thing I thought of this morning is, when do you put a little bit more money in? Because I like to do that when the market's volatile. And am I saying, oh, this is the very best day that I should buy a little bit lower? No, I may just buy some today. I might, you know, look at it next week and think, oh, I should have waited, but yet I'm going to put a little bit more in. So if you have some free cash, this is the time to just put some dollars in. And then lastly is that rebalancing, Bruce, but you and I talk a lot about this. If you did gain 80% in the S&P in the last 5 years, you might have more stocks than you even want to have. So if you do a rebalance and you take some of that growth still off the table, you know, we're only looking at a downturn here of not too recent where we were, you know? And so people tend to get a little bit confused about what these numbers really are, because I just looked at my portfolio this morning thinking, I'm going to take a peek, you know, and I'm a financial advisor. And I went, oh, really? I remember the number that it was higher, Bruce and Susie, but giving that back. I mean, I'm human, right? No, I don't want to lose that money, but I fully understand that there is going to be a point in time. I'm a long-term investor, that I get back to what I looked at, you know, even maybe a month ago, Bruce.
Yeah, I guess I'll close with this, and then we can let questions drive the show. And again, I suspect a lot of the questions will be on what's been going on in the market anyway. But Peg, I made the comment, I did several interviews over the last several days. And by the way, all you media folks, that includes Susie.
Yes.
I always get the phone call when the market drops 10%. I never get the phone call when the market goes up 10%. Media, the next time we have a resounding uptick in the market, can you call me and talk about that?
I'll call you.
Thank you, Susie. But I told somebody in an interview yesterday, and you just mentioned it, Peg, I fully intend, in all likelihood, unless something dramatic happens to change my mind, we have not funded my wife's IRA for 2025 yet. and I'm probably going to write a check tomorrow morning to fund her IRA. And like I told the person I was being interviewed by, I don't know that the market won't still go much lower. It might. I don't know where it's going to go in the short term. What I do know is it's about 10% cheaper than what it was. It, to me, it's on sale. If there was anything else in life, if I was looking at shoes or clothes or golf clubs or whatever it is, and it's on sale for 10%, I am much more likely to want to buy it at that discount than at full price. So I think this is a buying opportunity for long-term investors. I've said before on the show, and I mean it sincerely, market retractions like this really don't bother me personally as an investor. It bothers me more in terms of being concerned for my clients and making sure that they are able to achieve their financial goals and dreams, and I take that responsibility very seriously. But for my own money, market retractions honestly do not bother me. I see it as an opportunity. And with that, Susie, let's let listeners drive the show.
All right, 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. I'll ask you this one. This just came in. Where should I invest $10,000 tomorrow? You mentioned that if people have money, they might get into the market, right, Peg? So are there areas that are stronger even in this dip that you might recommend to people?
Well, I would say, the index that's really down is the NASDAQ, and that's kind of the smaller companies, a lot of tech companies, and that's down 19.3%. So if this is truly long-term money, that would be something to look at. Or generally, the S&P 500, which is down 13.7%, is more both tech and value stocks, like financial services and the drug companies. It's got a lot more diversification, but you're buying 500. I'm not a big fan of just trying to find that needle in the haystack individual company stock and take a whirl on that. I believe that we've done very well over time by diversifying and having many stocks in our portfolios, and these indexes are a good place to get that immediate diversification impact. Bruce.
Peg, I'm going to ask you a question kind of in response to the texter's question. One of the other things that I've read that should be an attractive investment right now is government bonds. And I know I just said that I'm going to put money in the stock market, and this person's saying, where should I put $10,000? But make the case for government bonds right now. Have you read the same thing I've been reading, that that's a kind of a safe haven right now for a lot of different reasons?
Well, we've been positioning U.S. Treasury bonds for the last years because the interest rate has been phenomenal for having the, kind of highest security backed by the U.S. government, being touted as one of the safe places. You could get 4.5% on a 5-year, 4.5% on a 10-year treasury. You could get a 4.5 on a 1-year treasury. For a couple of years now, I've been encouraging clients to go a little bit longer and lock in those rates because they were so attractive. Now, the 10-year treasury that used to be north of 4.5% just dropped to 3.99% on Friday. So what's happening is yes, people are going and buying those. And I wouldn't necessarily take your stock market position and go buy treasuries. What I would do, though, is take your safer side, your bond, your fixed income, maybe your money markets, and lock in some of those rates. Because the Fed's already saying that they probably aren't going to drop in May, but they're looking at maybe dropping interest rates in June. And if this is going to take a couple months here to figure out what's going to happen with all these tariffs. And so if you want to have a secure position, U.S. Treasuries, I highly recommend.
All right.
651-461-9226.
Good morning. Two financial questions from this texter. Are indexed futures a good indicator of how the markets will be on Monday and at what point will they close the markets during a free fall. Thanks for all the comfort you can provide to investors.
Peg, so the first question is on futures, which is basically an indicator or market prediction based on data. The second question, I honestly have to confess, I have no clue if there's a something in the law or something in procedure on Wall Street that if it's dropping too much in a single day, do they shut it down? I remember vaguely back in the crash of 08 that there was talk of that. I don't know if they actually did it, and if they do, I don't know at what level they decided to do that. I'll defer to you, Peg.
Yeah, so index for futures, you know, we're always hearing the highlights of what the day might be. I don't know what the percentages of those futuristic thoughts actually follow through, or if half of them are just changed, but they're just collecting data, like Bruce said. The closing the markets, I feel like that happened during COVID, and I don't know if it's some type of number that they have to hit or a percentage, but I don't. I would think with technology today that they would be able to continue to have the sales and buys and all of that. So we have to research that. We did. One of our investment people offered to be with Bruce and I today on the show. We said, "Oh no, we've got this." You know, we just know that people have to stay in the markets, and if you're a long-term investor, you have to stay. We didn't want to get in too much of the details today because we just don't know a whole lot about what's going to happen, like in the next day or the next 2 days. Longer term, as soon as we hear, you know, some of the settling of the tariffs and how they might the countries react this week, you know, we would say hold your positions at this point. Bruce?
No, that was good. I don't know any more than that. Susie?
Okay.
651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. A texter writes, "I'm 73. Can I do a Roth rollover conversion before I take my RMD? Is this the best time for that?"
So, Peg, this is a great question, and you just earlier in the show talked about it being potentially a good time to do Roth conversion because of the retraction of the market. This particular texter is looking at required minimum distribution at age 73 and looking at can they shrink the size of their traditional IRA to move it into Roth, thus reducing the amount of the required minimum distribution by making that IRA smaller. Good idea.
That's a great question. The IRS actually mandates that you take your RMD or required distribution before you would do any Roth conversion. So whatever that dollar amount is, you need to take that out, pay tax on it, and then you can look at your other monies in there and do a Roth conversion. So that's very cut and dry with the IRS.
All right.
But if you're not yet, I'm sorry, Susie, but if you're not yet 73 and you don't have to take an RMD, it might very well be a good strategy to do some conversion. And Peg, the other part of the texture or the other part of the question was, they said something about best time to do it. Obviously, this is going to vary based on every individual situation, but from 10,000 feet, oftentimes a good time to do Roth conversion is after you've retired and your income is down, and maybe you're not yet drawing Social Security. When you start to draw Social Security, your taxable income goes back up, but you've retired, so you're not getting your paycheck and you're not getting Social Security, and your income might be lower in those years than at any other time in retirement. That's often the sweet spot where Roth conversions can make a lot of sense. Susie, can we sneak in one more?
I think so. 651-461-9226. Again, it is 651-461-9226. Who do we have on the line with us? Josh, should we get the question in?
Ken from Chanhassen is on the line right now.
All right, Ken from Chanhassen, you are on with Bruce and Peg, reminding you to ask your question, and then they can answer it at the other end of the break. So go ahead, Ken.
Yes, I've had my house for over 40 years, am 80 years old, I'm thinking about selling. Unfortunately, over the years, I've done a ton of remodeling, replacing doors, windows, remodeling. Unfortunately, I did a lot of work myself, like the bathroom remodeling. I had a professional. Unfortunately, I don't have receipts for the majority of that work. So in selling, how is there some way I could substitute actual receipts somehow to verify that I did this work so I can help avoid taxes when I sell it? Because I'm over the 250 allowance as far as improving my house. Since I bought the house over 50 years ago for basically $40,000, now it's worth $450,000. So
wow.
I appreciate your help.
That's a big chunk of appreciation, right? Bruce and Peg, we have about 30 seconds. Do you want to pick it up on the other side?
Yeah, let's do that. There's a lot of things to talk about with regard to Ken's question. Thank you, Ken. That's a great question, and there's a lot of different things we'll bring up after the break on that.
And a lot of people are in the exact same boat with a house they've owned that's now worth a lot more money. Okay, 651-461-9226. It is the show we like to call Ask Bruce and Peg Anything. We're back after this. It is Your Money. It is the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Peg Webb and Bruce Helmer, Bruce, the founder of Wealth Enhancement. We're taking your calls. It is Ask Bruce and Peg Anything Day, which is really fun because you can do just what we said, ask them anything. 651-461-9226. Before we took our break, we got a question from Ken in Chanhassen about his house that he has worked hard to improve and now wants to sell it, and you listen to that, and maybe you guys want to pick up on the answer. I'll start with Bruce. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you, Susie Jones, and thanks for the question and the call, Ken, and thanks for listening. So, Peg, what Ken is talking about is you can sell your home and you can exclude a certain amount of your gain under the law. If you're a single filer, you can exclude $250,000 of gain. If you're a married couple filing jointly, you can exclude $500,000 of your gain when you sell your home. And the gain is based on your basis or what you bought the home for versus what you sell it for. But part of your basis would also include home improvement. So if I go buy a house for $250,000, but over the years I shingle my roof, I add a deck, I finish the basement, whatever, if I put another $100,000 into it, my basis is not $250,000, it's $350,000. So if I sell my home for $600,000, I don't have to pay any taxes on that gain. What Ken is asking is he doesn't have anything to verify the increase in basis or the improvements he made because he's handy and he did a lot of the work himself. So he doesn't have a record of that increase in basis. Peg, thoughts, suggestions? What would you say to Ken and other listeners?
Yeah, it's interesting, Bruce, in that the law of $250,000 and $500,000 for a couple, that hasn't existed, you know, for a long time. I think it was like late 90s or something. So a lot of people are living in their homes for a very long time and they don't have records that go all the way back. I actually had a personal situation that was similar to Ken's, in that I was cleaning one day and I'm just sick and tired of looking at all these folders. And I just went to town and I was just throwing them all away. Well, one of those was actually my file on one of the homes that I recently sold. And so I'm like, oh dear, what do I do? So I actually called, I had an interior decorator help me upgrade the place. So I called and they were still in business. So she was able to give me the record. So if you have a contractor or, you know, somebody that helped you when you purchased these things, a lot of these companies are still in business. So you could get that. It was also suggested to me by this design company that I get my tax assessment. Like if you've got an assessment that it's higher, and probably in Minnesota, you know, we get those and it says, oh, your value of your house is higher. You know, that was another thing that was suggested to take to my CPA. And then I'm a picture person. I take lots of pictures. So I had all these before and after pictures, which was suggested to me that would help. But other than that, you actually technically can't deduct or take, make your basis higher if you don't have some type of records. And so work with your CPA or, you know, the person that prepares your taxes, and they may have some other thoughts, but that's just what I shared in what I discovered then what that happened to me, Bruce.
Peg, that's a great answer, and I love that you have a personal experience to bring that to life. So I would tell you the same thing, Ken. If you did the work yourself, you don't get the charged labor costs on those projects, but you probably should have some record, even if you go to your bank and go back, and you should be able to look and see what you spent for materials over the years on these improvements. And so you should be able to piece that back together. But Peg's right. Unless you can verify it, you can tell the IRS, look, I did this and I did this, but they've got to see some documentation, some verification, some proof. But you should be able to produce the cost of materials, if nothing else. But the other thing I would add, Peg, and I'm speculating a little bit here, and I didn't get a chance to question Ken, but Ken, obviously, based on how he articulated the question, is single now, because he focused on the $250,000 number in terms of how much gain he can exclude. So I think he understands that. But I wonder if Ken were married previously and he lost his wife, if you lost your spouse within 2 years of selling the house, you might still be able to qualify for the $500,000 exclusion and rather than the $250,000. So if she passed recently and you were married and your spouse passed within 2 years, you might be eligible for twice as much exclusion. But the other thing, Peg, that comes to mind is Ken mentioned that however many years ago, 40 years ago, he paid $30,000 for the house. So he's thinking of a basis of $30,000. But I think that the basis for the house actually can step up when you lose a spouse. If a spouse passes away, you can relook at the value of the house on the date of the spouse's passing, and that becomes the new basis. So if Ken bought it for $30,000, he and his wife, 40 years ago, but it was worth $300,000 when she passed away, the basis can step up to $300,000, and he might not have to worry about trying to backtrack and piece together the cost of all those materials. Am I understanding that right, Peg? Is that your understanding also?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a few more details to the rules if you do have a spouse. Well, number one, if you have one, and then if one has passed. Yes, that's all accurate. Mm-hmm.
Ken, I hope that helped. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, how much of all of your assets that you manage are in stocks? Now, I'm reading that kind of interesting. I want to know if the person wants to know how many of your, what your investment portfolio should be in stocks.
That's a fair question. Peg, you want to, there's a lot of different, again, a lot of different ways we can answer that. Peg, you want to take a shot at it?
Yeah, well, I this is your quote, Bruce. Everybody's a snowflake, right? They're all different. They all have different time horizons and age and aspirations and goals. And, you know, once we figure out what their, MO is and what we see happening is how much growth do you need and how much fixed income or money market do you need? So, the way that we think about that is time horizon, and then short term, medium term, and long term. We talk about this year money matrix. I usually refer to it as taxable money, tax deferred money, and tax advantage money. But along with that, on the left hand side, we make compartments of time. So 0 to 5 years, 5 to 10, 15 years, and then 15 years or longer. And so the way that we figure out what percentage to put where is going to be guided by, what vision you see and what's happening and what's important to you, Bruce.
Yeah, I'll just add to that a little bit that at Wealth Enhancement, our methodology is we have a finite number of what we think are efficient asset allocation models. So in other words, you can't come in and say, I'm going to pick the investments I want you guys to, you know, I want you to create my own unique customized portfolio. We really don't do that. It's really like selecting off of going to a restaurant and selecting off of items on the menu. We have, I think, enough options on our menu that we've got portfolios that are a good fit for everyone. And then it's up to the advisor and the client to determine which portfolio or portfolios, because it's usually plural, right? As Peg said, we diversify not only from an asset allocation standpoint, but also from a tax standpoint. So a lot of my clients might have one portfolio in an IRA and another portfolio outside of an IRA, and those two asset allocations might be very different. The amount of exposure to stocks versus fixed income might be very different. But then at the end of the day, what we're trying to do in aggregate is use those portfolios, combination of portfolios, to get the desired return that the client wants or needs to be successful based on their definition of successful, and to get that return with the least amount of risk possible. So the exposure to stocks is going to vary. Like Peg said, they're snowflakes. Stock exposure is going to vary dramatically from client to client. But what it all comes back to is that the longer the time horizon, the more stock we're going to probably recommend that you have. Because, again, historically, long-term, despite what happened on Thursday and Friday, long-term, historically, stocks have given investors their greatest rewards. And we think that will continue to be true in the future. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or for Peg, we have a caller on the line. Gene is calling today from Coon Rapids. Thanks for calling, and go ahead with your question.
Thank you. You were talking earlier about staying the course in the market. And ordinarily, I agree with you very much, as you frequently preach, that market timing is a fool's errand. But I think, given the fact that our current situation and the cost for the drop in the market is government action, that looks to me, if one is convinced as I am, that it's going to be a couple of years before we recover from what the government is doing currently, would I not be a fool to stay the course for the next 2 years? And I'm an 80-year-old that's invested a long time in the market and always believed, as you have preached, that market timing is a fool's errand. But it's a different time now. Thank you.
Hey, Gene, thank you. And thank you for a great question and a thoughtful question and articulated very well. Peg, you want to go first?
Sure. I don't know how to put this politely. It is a repeat of what we have heard over our entire four decades of doing this job. Like, this time is different. And I would agree with you that hearing about tariffs in this worldwide situation that we're in, I referred to COVID just because we were all in it together, kind of. But this is different. Well, I think I do believe we would be forecasting, if you will, what's going to happen on the backside, because this is something I've never been involved in. I have rarely, even in my job, heard about these tariffs. You know, I understand that they happen, but you know, the situation that we're in right now, this is going to take a little bit of time. I have no idea how long of a time, but if you are a long-term investor, and if this is something now that, Gene, that you already were thinking about, you know, last week about getting out, Bruce mentioned this in the beginning of the show. If this is where your allocation was a week ago and you weren't concerned, then, you know, but if you wished you had last week because you were planning on maybe changing your percentages, then go ahead and change them. I just don't want listeners to think, oh, that I can take my money out of the market now. It's going to be rocky, and I'm going to get back in. just like Bruce explained today. The odds of you picking that right day to go back in, and I mean, there's only a few like super great days after something like this happens, and you're still not going to feel like real positive when you're supposed to be putting this money back. It just doesn't work. So if you're a long-term investor, my recommendation and our firm's recommendation is then just leave it alone. You've got time, Bruce.
Yeah, and, you know, I think part of where you're coming from, Ken, is a lot of people think this is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. It remains to be seen, and Peg said this earlier in the show, how all the countries that we're hitting with these tariffs are going to react. Now, China's already come out and said they're going to do a reciprocal tariff and whatnot, but some countries might come out and say, okay, we're going to reduce the tariffs that we're charging the U.S., and then we might, as a country, reverse course on those countries. Or who knows? I mean, President Trump might next week say, okay, I got your attention. Now I'm going to put, I mean, we just don't know what's going to happen. But the next weeks are certainly going to be interesting. But yes, it certainly could get a lot worse before it gets better. And I know hearing the just stay the course answer sometimes frustrates people because financial advisors say that all the time, and you want to hear something different. But the reason we keep saying it is because historically that's been the right answer. I can try to give you a different answer just because you want a different answer, but it doesn't make it right. I can say 1 + 1 = 3, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. 1 + 1 = 2 always has, always will. And I think for long-term investors, staying in the course is still the right answer. But, Peg, I had a situation where I was talking to someone that called me last week, not even a client. They actually work with another advisor, but they called me because they were in a panic based on how much they had lost. And I tried to help them even though they weren't a client. And I said, look, you didn't really lose. If you're in the market the last couple of years, you're still in the black. You made a lot more in 23 and 24 than what you've lost so far this year. And they said, no, we didn't. What we've lost this year is more than what we gained the last few years. We're in the red. Well, then I would suggest to them, you have a different problem. Your problem didn't start last week with the market retraction. Something was wrong before that because you should have done really well in 23 and 24. And if you didn't, something is askew there, and I don't know exactly what it is. You're not my client. So, I know it's hard, and I also like what you said, Peg, not to be discourteous to the caller. And we appreciate people listening and calling. But, yes, every time there is a market retraction like this, we hear, this time it's different. This has never happened before. We've never seen anything like this. And you know what? I'm going to say this, too. Some of this is political. The people that voted for President Trump are probably less nervous about this market retraction. Those that didn't vote for him, those that don't like him, see this as the apocalypse. Neither one of those things is probably true. It's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. But again, for myself, my money, my long-term money is staying in the market. In fact, I'm probably likely to add more to the market personally because I see it as a buying opportunity. Susie?
651-461-9226. You can ask Bruce or Peg anything during this edition of Your Money. And a texter just texted in a question I asked you when I did my interview. I am retired right now, living on investments. I don't have a long-term game anymore. How do I survive this Trump tariff situation? Downturn, they wrote.
Yeah. So, Peg, again, and I'm not unsympathetic, you and I can sit here and say, well, your short-term money shouldn't have been in the market. But what if it was? Now what do they do?
Well, I hope they're not 100% in the market. I can't even believe that would be a possibility. But if it is, then I would get some money that's at least safe, you know, that you feel like you can live on. I don't think you pull money out of a stock market portfolio to live on. Now, it is possible when the market was really high, Wealth Enhancement Group encouraged people to take money out of their stock market to use or move some of that to the short term because you have to replenish your short term if you're living on part of it. So if you are zero safe money, then yes, tomorrow morning you should probably go in there and take some of the money, and maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's a year's worth or more, and say, okay, those are all profits still on my portfolio. I'm going to do that tomorrow. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, I believe very strongly, and I try to coach clients to do this, that as you're coming into retirement, you should have at least 1 year, maybe up to 3 years, of living expenses in fixed income, safe money with no risk of principal. And if you've got 3 years worth of that and the rest is in stocks, then you should be able to not have to sell stocks and live comfortably on that money for up to 3 years. And I'm highly confident that any negative market correction will probably regain a lot of the losses in 3 years or less, and then you can sell stocks again. So again, if it's too late and you didn't do that, then we have to go to some sort of a plan B. But I try to coach people ahead of time so that this doesn't end up happening to them. Susie, can we squeeze in one more?
I think we can, actually. And we're sticking with the theme of the portfolios being down. Someone wonders, and this is really, what would be your best guess as to when that might recover, get that back?
Peg, it's speculation.
It is. It's like a crystal ball.
Okay, yeah. That crystal ball, remember, I have it in my office, and every time people come in, I'm like, look at this crystal ball. It's not working for me. It's not working for you. Meaning, I don't know. Right. But what I do know is that four decades doing this, that if you have long money, leave it long. You're just not going to be able to replace it if you think you're going to short-term take it out and then get it back in. Bruce?
And I will quickly point to the example I gave at the very beginning of the show. We went back and looked in time at the 15 biggest single day drops going back to 1960. And the vast majority of the time, the market was up significantly just 1 year later. That doesn't guarantee it'll happen this time. There's no guarantees, no promises, but the historical track record gives me reason for optimism.
I think that's a good place to bring it to a close, don't you? We got more questions, and that's my cue to tell everybody that's on the text line this morning, please write this number down, 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. They will get back to you with an answer. Make it a great week.